Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hi there. Welcome to session 82 of Selling the Couch. Hope you're having a wonderful week. So the day that this episode goes live, I'm actually in Chicago for Podcast Movement, which is the big industry conference for podcasters. Never imagined I would be attending Podcast Movement, but this is my second year. It's a wonderful conference and just getting to learn more about the industry and where the industry is going. One of the folks that I'm most looking forward to hearing is Alex Blumberg, who is from Planet Money from NPR. He started there and now has a couple of really cool podcasts. One is called Startup, and he's the co-founder of Gimlet Media. If you are listening to this episode on the day that it goes live, we're actually grabbing lunch in downtown Chicago. If you check out the Facebook community at sellingthecouch.com/community, you should see a thread of where we're meeting up. We're going to be meeting up around noon Central Time on that Thursday, or today. Today's podcast is a topic that we don't often talk about when it comes to private practice, and that's this idea of rolling with the tough times in private practice. My guest is John Harrison. John is a licensed professional counselor, and one of the things that I think that really resonated for me and I was so encouraged by was John's willingness to talk about this topic, because I think that we can live in this time where private practice is often seen as this amazing process, an amazing journey, which it is from all of these conversations. But there are definitely tough times of owning a business. And so we're going to dive into a lot of the pearls of wisdom that John's learned along the way. More specifically, we're going to start at what even made John consider private practice. We're going to talk a lot about the ebbs and flows of private practice and how John both mentally prepares for those times as well as financially in terms of budgeting and all of those things prepares for those times. And then we dive into some of the patterns that he's noticed when it comes to private practice, kind of more the seasonal patterns. And then we wrap up with John sharing some wisdom with regard to resources that have helped him as he's tried to address and try to handle the inevitable lulls that come with private practice. So here is my conversation with John Harrison from johnharrisoncounseling.com. Hi, John. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hey, Melvin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to our conversation. This is a topic we don't often talk about in private practice, which are how do you navigate and how do you roll with the tough times in private practice?
Right. Yeah. And it's been certainly a theme for me the past year. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. And I'm grateful, I think, for your vulnerability in being able to talk about a topic like this. I thought we could just start kind of general. What made you even think about private practice to start with?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I graduated grad school in 2010. And I think many other graduates, you see a very sparse amount of employment opportunities. And I took an agency job. It barely paid enough for me to cover my student loans. And at the same time I was doing that, I was also applying for a job a couple of months later, a job at the VA, which I eventually landed. And when I got that job, I thought I had arrived. I thought this was like the perfect scenario for me. It was good benefits. I was working with the clientele that I wanted to, being a veteran myself. The pay was excellent. And so I thought that I had hit it big. And then, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy and some politics that go on with that institution. People are great. The clients are great. But I wanted to be in a place where I could be more creative and have more autonomy with what I wanted to do. And so I started to do private practice in the evenings about 2.5 years ago. And that's what I did.
That's amazing to make that jump from something that was so comfortable to like taking that leap. How do you think you found that, like, I don't know if it's courage or boldness or whatever it is to actually, you know, make that leap? Or do you think having that sort of transition period where you were doing it part-time, do you think that helped, or what do you think?
I mean, some of it was feeling the push just from being frustrated. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some good in being a little, I wouldn't say mad, but just being frustrated and feeling stuck. So I had some push there, and I allowed myself to start the private practice in part-time. And I did self-pay too, but I was bringing enough income in on my full-time job. I didn't have to have clients. So there was a lot of relaxation in the whole process. It was fun. I enjoyed it. There was no pressure to make the ancillary income. And so, like, on one hand, I was frustrated in my full-time job, but it was enough to kind of get me pushed out the door and start doing something that I, you know, getting home at 9:30 at night almost every night wasn't great, mm-hmm. but, you know, being able to go to my own office, sit in my own chair and run my sessions and know that my clients were coming to see me, they weren't assigned to me. And that was just a really great feeling and good experience for me.
I mean, there's something like very liberating about that. You know, the other thing I was thinking was, so I think for some of us, when we get into like tough job situations where things aren't working out and you're just so frustrated, like it paralyzes us, right? Like into like almost inaction. We just stay there and we ride it out. Or, but there was something in you that said, okay, I'm frustrated. I'm going to do something about it. Like, how did you find that in you?
You know, I don't know, because I never thought of myself as like an entrepreneur or a business owner. And so the first thing that I had to do was really analyze my thought process and some of my fears. I had to look and see, like, how difficult is this really going to be? And I bought a book, and I think it was called like The Guide to Therapists in Private Practice or something. It was a relatively short book. And I read through it, and I'm like, you know, this isn't going to be that difficult. And I just started making the small steps. And I linked up with one of my friends from graduate school, and it just happened to be at the exact same time. He was looking at leaving his group practice, and I was looking at starting a private practice in the evenings. And we just rented space, and we supported one another. And it just kind of authentically, or I guess organically, took off from there.
That's really neat. It sounds, I mean, there's like a pearl of wisdom there, which it sounds like having someone that was at a similar point and having that accountability was really helpful.
Yeah, it's really helpful. And it's good to have people who don't just reflect back to you kind of like their own projection of what could go wrong, or, you know, some of those negatives. And so, yeah, I would push him a bit. He would push me. We would, you know, go to there was a bar a couple of buildings down the street from our office and meet up for a beer on like a Friday and just talk business. And it just felt good. It started off right. I was very successful. I felt like I was getting clients in. He was too. It was like, this is the path. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, this is definitely what I want to be doing. And so as time went on, there was much more of a positive feedback from that part-time private practice experience, which got me further and further away from, you know, keeping my full-time job. And there was more of a feeling like, I can do this, I can make this happen. I can be a business owner. I can think entrepreneurially. I can do all these things that I never really thought that it would be me. I just thought I'd end up retiring at the VA and, you know, cashing in my pension check and, you know, living the dream. That's what I thought, but that's not the case anymore.
You know, I think every time I hear these stories, just, it takes so much courage, you know, to be an entrepreneur. But I think sometimes like it's kind of glorified in terms of like, I think sometimes it's just taking a small step, you know, and it's the cumulative effect of small steps that lead to big changes and more courage.
They do. And private practice and owning your own business is the ultimate self-growth laboratory. I mean, there is no other job. And that was part of what I couldn't put my finger on until recently, I think, about my transition, was that no other job affords you to grow professionally and personally like owning your own business, because there is no safety net there. All of your fears are coming right back on you from probably the course of your entire life in some form or another. And if you want to look at it in a way of that being a gift and an opportunity and a challenge, it can be so rewarding. But if you're only looking at it in terms of this is really, really hard and I'm tired of being dragged through the dirt every other, you know, quarter or month, then it's going to be that much harder to maintain. And I just, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, here in a little bit, you know, the struggles that I've had, I wouldn't trade them in for anything, because I've learned so much about myself and I feel like I've grown so much as an individual the last 2 years. I just wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah, right. You said something earlier that I wanted to just touch on, which I think is like really powerful, which is, I think sometimes we get this idea of like networking. That word sounds so foreign and it just rubs us the wrong way. And all you did was connect with a friend over beer on a Friday mm-hmm. night, right? And support each other. And that's networking, right?
That is. And, you know, that was something that started off over conversations even years before we started our own private practices, like, what if we did this? And we allowed ourselves to talk and explore and to dream. And then, you know, in terms of networking, you know, now it's what, like, when you do it enough and you know what it actually is, and it's building relationships and it's talking about things that you care about with people who care about hopefully the similar things. And you just build this kind of like this group and this tribe. And it's just about connecting. And we connect like authentically as therapists and as people. And so when we're doing networking, it's really not that much of a systematic process or anything to be intimidated by. I mean, it is you just being you, because you're the product anyway. So go ahead and just be you, you know?
Absolutely. I wanted to shift a little bit and get down into the reality, I think, sometimes of a lot of times of private practice. So what was something that's happened, and it can even be more than one thing, but that's something that's happened in private practice that's really tested your resolve?
Well, and I'll describe it in terms of this, and I think that a lot of the listeners will probably be able to relate. It's a series of things that are the same in terms of, I kind of feel like life lessons just keep on coming back to you until you learn them. And each time they come back, you learn them a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper. But they don't necessarily, it's not like linear where we just go through one thing and then, you know, we graduate from that and we never see it again. You know, in my private practice, I would have these, and I think I mentioned earlier, I had a ton of success initially, and I didn't realize how fortunate I was to get, you know, a lot of clients relatively quickly. And I think within a year, I had like 10 or 12 client hours a week, and I was doing my part-time thing and I'm making good money, and that was all great. And then I thought, well, because my linear mind is thinking, well, this is just going to go one direction and it's just going to keep going, you know, up. And what ended up happening was I hit my first slide, and I can't remember exactly what time of year it was. I want to say it was in the summertime. And I thought, was, what am I doing wrong? What technique am I not searching for that can help me implement my business model in a way that gets me back on track? And so I did those things. I reached out to people. I got coaching. I saw consultants, you know, virtually and online or on the phone. And I read articles and I did all those things. And then all of a sudden, my caseload would jump again. I'm like, oh, well, I've done it. I've arrived again. I figured it out. And then I think more recently, I had a dip after one of those peaks in the fall, and then a dip came in December. And so I said, well, I'll just make it through December, because the last year when I hit New Year's, I had all of these clients come in. It was like this big surge after the New Year. So I thought, well, all I have to do is just hold off until January 2nd or whatever the first Monday of the month was. And it didn't come. And the dip kept happening. And as you know, and the other, you know, therapists listening know that, you know, clients graduate, they spread out their sessions, they stop seeing you for different reasons. And I wasn't getting my referrals coming in like I usually would. And so I went right back to the same mindset, got to do more, got to think more, got to figure out more, got to fix more. And then sure enough, March came and I had my best months ever for my business in March and April. And I was like, I've done it. I've figured it out. I've arrived. It's like the same lesson kept popping up again. And then sure enough, Melvin, you know, not even 6 weeks ago in mid-May, a culmination of good things and bad things happened in my practice, where I had clients graduate. I had some people have to leave counseling for, I guess, their own personal reasons. I had a few couples that I had to refer out because they couldn't commit to the work in the way I like to do my couples work. And it was like, well, what's going on? But see, this time, I feel like I decided to take a different approach and not be so reactive. And So, you know, so far it's made a difference. It's really made a difference to be able to kind of take a step back and not be so, I guess, in the, like a fear-based mindset and be so reactive.
I think it's amazing how our minds think of, like, I think there's certain patterns which are true, right? Like, but other times, like how we just, our minds just assume, oh, it was like this last year around this time. It's going to be the exact same way.
Right.
Right. Like,
right.
I don't know. This, I think, is one of the unspoken things I feel just generally of entrepreneurship, you know, the up and down nature of it.
There's so much up and down nature. There's so much that we can't control. And yet we still go back to the idea as human beings that, oh, we can control this. And all I have to do is figure out the right way to fix this. And the thing is that so much of this process that I'm learning, it's not even about fixing. Because when we say we need to do something or fix it, we're implying something is broken. And this is part of the process of owning a business. Nothing in this is broken. And if we deprive ourselves the opportunity to sit with what's going on, like I had mentioned earlier, being in that laboratory of self-growth and improvement, we deprive ourselves of being in that space that's so invaluable in owning your own business. And I'm learning not to do that. I'm learning that even when things are slow, there's something to be gained. Even when things are quote unquote dipping, there's something to be learned and found in that.
I think we were talking about this earlier. I think it just gives you a, like the structures and the foundation, like the group, the most growth happens in those stages where things didn't go the way that you planned or how you expected it to.
Absolutely not. And it's funny, as I work with my clients, I talk about how we can mindfully react with those things. And I do a lot of mindfulness with my clients, and I tend to practice a lot of mindfulness, and here I am forgetting my own way of living and my own methods of how to cope. But I sometimes go back to this analogy that I have, and I've written about this before, and I think I did a quick video blog about this. You know, imagine that your business is a book, and like you write a story, or your business venture is a story, and it's got several chapters. You've already decided how the book's going to end. You already know the culmination of the story. And then within that book, there's all these chapters. Now, if you were to write that book, would you make all of those chapters like all great and sunshine and gumdrops? Or would you have chapters in there that are about dealing with struggle, overcoming adversity, finding it out what it is that makes you tick? All those things are very integral to who we are as people, and it's part of our story. And it's like somehow we forget that in this process, that it's just, it's okay. It's okay when things don't go like we want them to go.
You used the word, like, you saw the slide coming, or like there was a slide that happened. Did you, like, were there things that were on the horizon, like that you thought, like that kind of pinpointed you, that you thought, oh my gosh, I might be expecting a downturn? Or was it like kind of come out of the blue?
I think most of them kind of come out of the blue. And I think there's some conflict there too, because, you know, when clients leave, you're grateful that they've benefited from your services and you're happy for them to graduate. And that's the point of the therapeutic process, is to be able to take those things and use them on your own in your own life. And but as these people are leaving, it's like, well, where are the phone calls coming? Because I need clients to sustain. So there's a lot of conflict that goes on, and that can be difficult.
What's a weird space, right? Like,
it is. It's so weird. Right. It's so weird. I think it's another one of those lessons that's just, that only happens in private practice. You don't have that in agency work, because the agency is going to provide you with your referrals. Same, maybe impossible with the group practices too. But I think most of the time it just kind of happened. And I'd turn around and I'd look at my finances like, oh crap, like this isn't like last month. And I don't think I ever prepare for summertime in the wintertime. I think more so now. And usually those do dip to some degree, to varying degrees. But I think most of the time it just happens. And it could be any part of the year.
So I wanted to kind of break down that idea you just said, like, into two parts, which is like the first part is, how do you mentally prepare for those lulls? And the second part is, how do you, like, practically, from like a budgeting or financially, prepare for it? So let's tackle that first part. How do you, like, mentally prepare for lulls, even if you don't know, like, if they're coming, right? Like, they inevitably will, but you just don't know when.
Right. Well, like I said earlier, I really like to refer back to that idea of this being my own story and my own process, and can I be present with it? And so then that comes from probably, you know, a lot of from my own mindfulness and meditation practice. And I've noticed that the more grounded I am mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, the easier I can roll with the changes and be more flexible. And also I noticed too that my work with my clients is just better. Things are not just better in my work. Things are better at home. Things are better all the way around. I'm just much more able to go with the flow. And so mentally, that's been probably the best thing for me as I prepare for, you know, the expected lulls. They're just going to be part of the process.
So like, let me just make sure I heard you right. So there's just mentally being present, and it seems like just being mindful and being present of that situation, it helps you to like not personalize it to a point, especially where it like impacts your relationship with your family and maybe even impacts the current clients that you have.
No, that's right on. I think showing up and being present is a full-time job. It's not just about showing up at home, showing up in your relationships. You've got to show up with your clients. You have to show up. And the best way for me to do that is to be mindful about what is actually going on here. I'm listening to the negative self-talk or the storylines that are going on in my mind that tell me that I'm, you know, an imposter, or I'm having that, like, you know, that imposter syndrome, or like the feeling like a fraud, or am I showing up and knowing that my clients need me to show up and be present as me? And that's really important. And of course, that benefits me as well. And there's something too, when you ask about preparing mentally, I'm assuming that, like, you know, Tamara Subtle. I hope I said her name right. She said something, and one of her biggest lessons when we did our work together was, my practice really transitioned when I started to treat it as a very serious profession and not a hobby.
What's the difference between that, like, in terms of mindset?
I think for me, it's not taking advantage of my flexibility with it being my own business.
On a day-to-day, like, what does that mean?
I need to keep myself accountable. I need to make sure that I'm in the office at a certain time and I'm doing a certain amount of work that I plan for, and that I don't play around on Facebook all day long and talk to people and those type of things. And, you know, when we're done with this conversation, I'm sure I could just get off and go home and go do whatever I want. But there's some certain things that I need to be doing. So, you know, being mentally structured and organized and present, and knowing that there's sacrifice in this owning your own business, that it's not all just about doing whatever you want.
It's like a different way, right? Yeah, it's not just a hobby. I think you just said the best way.
Yeah, because if it's just all about, you know, being creative and fun and exploring and doing all those things that, you know, initially attractive about it, I'm ignoring all the things that have to go into being a successful business owner, which is there's a lot of detail-oriented tasks. There's a lot of logistical things I have to keep up with. And honestly, there's a lot of things I don't like to keep up with, but I have to. Like, who really likes doing notes? I hate doing notes. It's the worst thing ever. I'd rather like put a nail through my eyeball. But, you know, those are things that I have to do to stay on top of my practice. And also too, you know, when I'm mindful about it, I know how good I feel when I finish them.
Yeah.
I think that feels good to be on top of it.
Yeah. I think it's Agnes Wayne when she said she used to ostrich in fear of some of these like tasks, you know, that I think are not glorified, but are the reality of owning a business, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do you financially prepare for these lulls?
Okay, so I'm not doing as well in this department. I will
admit. Laboratory, right?
But yeah, back to the laboratory. Okay, so currently this is what I'm getting into. Setting up some alternate income streams. The first one has been tough for me. I had thought to myself, I will never interview for another job again. I'm done. This is it. I'm my own boss from here on out. I'm actually going to bite the bullet here and interview for a contracting position here this week, where I'm going to hopefully be taking on about 6 to 9 hours of group and individual work at a clinic. And making peace with that's been huge. And then there's some other things that I'm looking at getting into. I've been working with Mari Lee. She's a, I think you know her. She's a...
she was on the podcast.
Yeah. Okay, great. That's where I heard her initially, I think. And so I've been working on some things with her in terms of setting up like a workshop and building some other streams of income that way. That's really what I got right now. Some public speaking engagements. I'm going to start doing some work with the local Toastmasters and getting involved in some other areas that scare the crap out of me, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway.
I think you just said something which is like subtle, which is but powerful. Like these lulls, you don't just sit there moping, right? And just kind of ostrich in fear, right? But you try to think outside the box and use that time to figure out what you can do differently and how you can create some more stability. Because just inherently, I think small businesses and especially private practices are not always like they're erratic, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you're going to ostrich, go ahead and just take a few hours or maybe even a couple of days and go ahead and have that. I mean, basically a pity party. And I say that in halfway in jest, but you know, it's okay to go ahead and feel and really be mindful about what you're experiencing. But there's also a boundary you need to set too. And that is that go ahead and feel down and be in the dirt for a while. But you know, you get to make the decision on when you're going to go ahead and dust yourself off and pick yourself back up again and get back to doing what needs to be done. I mean, there is no other way to do life really in general.
You're a veteran, grateful for your service to our country. And I just wondering this, like, what do you think just being in the service, how do you think that has helped you in terms of mindset when it comes to being a private practice owner?
Thanks for saying that too, to start off with. You know, the military is interesting. There's a lot to it that I don't think everyone sees. There's a lot of security in that job. And you get a lot provided for you. And speaking of benefits, the military benefits, at least as an officer, I know there's a lot of people who struggle in the enlisted ranks. But as an officer, there's really secure aspects of that job. And but then on the flip side, there's a lot of things that I do and I did in the military I never want to have to do again that were very challenging. And I remember, I hope I'm answering your question correctly, you know, how does that help me persevere? I remember thinking about this story the other day. I was talking to my coach actually, and I was a brand new lieutenant and I was doing my very first major combined exercise at Fort Hood, Texas. And it was a brigade level exercise. So it's got like thousands and thousands of people involved. And I was, as a lieutenant, I was in my job as an engineer officer was at this particular exercise was to install minefields for the infantry as their to help them provide defenses for their position. So I don't want to make this too complicated. I'm laying out these mines. I run out of mines. It wasn't my job to count the mines. It was the logistics officer's job to count the mines. I run out. My company commander comes up and he says, "You're out." I said, "I know. What should I do?" He said, "Well, just take the mines and spread them out at double width." And I'm like, "Well, sir, if we do that, that goes against doctrine and that's not correct." He's like, "I'm telling you to do it. Do it." I said, "Fine. I did it." And then we get to the rehearsal, which is like you get all these, you know, officers in front of this huge sand table and they're going over like how we're going to execute this mission. And the guy in charge is a colonel, the like 3rd Brigade, 1st Cavalry Division. And he's like, "Hey, I'm curious, why does the minefield look the way it does?" Right. And my company commander is standing to the left of me and he says, "Sir, I'll take care of it. My lieutenant just screwed up. He's new," and totally threw me under the bus. Right. And I'm thinking like, this is my first exercise and I had never felt so unsupported in my professional career. And I was very young too. I was like 23 years old. And I think about that and just how lonely being on your own can be and it can feel. And I think, you know, the military can be a very trial by fire experience and there can be a lot of things that you just learn on the go. And when I come up against the hardships I'm having in my current business, it does help to reflect on some of those things and know that it's going to be okay. I can definitely make this work and make it through it.
That's neat. John, thank you so much for doing this. I feel like we could talk for another half an hour, but I know you have to go. What are some of the best ways that folks can touch base with you? And definitely share a little bit about your podcast that's coming up. I'm really looking forward to hearing this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, let me start with that, and then I'll give you my website address and so the listeners can follow me there. So kind of in spirit with what we've been talking about today, I wanted to create an interview series and a project that it allows people to talk about their whys and why they do the things they do in their business or why they do the things in their lives and their lifestyles, what drives them, what motivates them, what inspires them. And I know that there's so many resources out there, especially on Facebook, and we can look at all the how-tos and the do's, and those are so very important. But just as important and part of that balance is we have to understand our altruistic or our integral emphasis on what it is that we're actually doing and what drives us. So I wanted to just talk to people in really different professions and really kind of maybe help them verbalize, like, what makes you tick? What allows you to do the things that you do? And to hopefully inspire people that they can find their own unique paths and maybe even their own unique ways of expressing themselves through their work. And heck, maybe even starting up their own business or private practice too. So you can find that on my website, and you can locate me at johnharrisoncounseling.com. And there's a subset page within my website that talks about the True Calling Project. And you can find more about that there. Or you can also find the True Calling Project on Facebook. I have a page there you can locate, and I'll have like a weekly interview posted every Monday. So
awesome. John, thank you again for doing this. And it's been wonderful getting to know you.
Yeah, you as well. And Melvin, the work you do is fantastic. And I've been following your podcast for quite a while. And I know I speak for a lot of people that the amount that you end up affecting and helping and touching people and the work you do probably goes way beyond your ability to comprehend. So I thank you for having me on. I thank you for all the work that you do.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Take good care.
You too, Melvin. Talk to you later.
Right. Hey there. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with John. It was so interesting just interviewing John, because when I was asking him these questions, I was literally hanging on every word, because when he was answering those questions, I just kept thinking, man, this guy isn't just like talking about this in abstract kind of theory, but he's really lived through that up and down of private practice and he's learned a lot. So hope you enjoyed today's conversation and hope that you got a lot of things out of it. Show notes to today's episode and some of the resources that John mentioned can be found at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 82. If you'd like to continue this conversation on some of the ways that you address the lulls of private practice and the things that have worked for you, you can do that in the Selling the Couch community at sellingthecouch.com/community. We are well over, actually, we just passed the 2,000 member mark and are quickly marching forward. So thank you so much for continuing to share our community with our colleagues all around the world. Have a wonderful week. And again, John's website is at johnharrisoncounseling.com. Take good care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.